There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we're in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance.
Coming to you from our studio in Santa Barbara, California, this is the Fear Me Out podcast. We're not your typical self-help program. Our show takes a deep dive into those psychological issues that affect us on a daily basis. We hope to shift your perspective and have you experiencing emotions differently. Now, here are your hosts, Kim Foskey and Dr. Dana Saperstein.
All right. So our listeners have heard a hypnotherapy session that involved myself and you, Dr. Dana. And so we thought, because I'm struggling, this is Kim speaking at the moment, we thought that we would provide you this week with an actual talk therapy session. So Dr. Dana has agreed this afternoon to do a therapy session with me. Hopefully not only will I, but you, the listening audience, we'll get something out of this as well, because as we talked about on the podcast before, Dr. Dana has a very distinctive style of how he does therapy, and I think this will be eye-opening for our listening audience, and hopefully helpful to me as well, which I actually know it will be helpful for me, because things have seemed to be getting worse for me and not better. So here you go.
Just to say a few words before we get started, my approach is very spontaneous. I don't have an idea necessarily of what we're going to talk about. Usually when I greet somebody that is coming in for a visit, my obvious first question is, you know, to ask you how you're doing. So that's how I'd like to start our visit here today, Kim, is just for me to kind of get an idea of what's happening with you. Now, I will say that internally, as soon as I set my eyes on you, I do an intuitive sort of read on what your energy feels like to me and how you seem. And I can tell that you're not okay. You don't look your regular self. You seem actually quite sad to me just looking at you. And so that's how I start off, is just by checking in with what you feel like to me at the same time that you're describing to me what's going on with you.
Yeah, I appreciate that you picked up on it. Sometimes you can't hide that stuff. I try to be a good actor. I've done a good job throughout my life of trying to hide my feelings from others and acting like nothing is bothering me. But I've learned, you know, through the therapy that I've had and the hypnotherapy I've had and all the other amalgamations that I've kind of gone through in kind of understanding myself and finding myself from within and everything else we've talked about on this podcast, that I can't hide from the truth anymore. And so when I'm feeling bad, I'm feeling bad. And I think now that I understand myself better, that feeling is more accentuated, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, I would absolutely expect that when you give yourself permission to really feel the depth of your feelings, certainly as an empath, it's going to be much stronger than it would be for the average person. And plus, I know you well enough to know that your facial musculature changes when you're not feeling okay.
Yeah.
And your eyes change significantly. You just don't have that normal vitality and sort of like a sparkle in your eyes. It's not there right now.
Right.
And I know that, you know, our listening audience can't see, but I'm going to describe the idea that you again are not going to quit your day job to become an actor, because your feelings are written all over your body, and especially your face and your eyes. So was my reading correct that you're experiencing some sadness?
Yeah, I think it's definitely sadness. I've had an increased level of anxiety over the last couple of weeks. That it's created some level of insomnia, And then just general unease throughout the day. It's not something that at least I feel the anxiety portion of it doesn't need to be medicated. What I'm talking about is either prescription medication or, you know, cannabis or any other thing that's potentially used for the level of anxiety. It's manageable, but it's constantly there.
Okay.
It's not affecting, I mean, it's affecting obviously my mood and somewhat of my well-being, but it isn't affecting my day-to-day ability to function.
Well, you and I have, you know, talked at length about the idea that when you feel anxious, it's usually because you're not feeling safe. And I'm just kind of curious if anything's happened lately that has kind of caused you to feel unsafe in the world, maybe feeling of being out of control, or have you had any experiences that have left you feeling kind of demoralized or defeated in some way?
I'm gonna go back 6 or 7 months, and if you've listened to the podcast for a while, I think people have either heard the episode or at least heard me talking about doing a psychedelic journey. And I was at a pretty good place throughout 2022 and hadn't really experienced any symptoms of anxiety, depression, feeling bad about myself, low self-worth, or any of that. And again, I did the psychedelic journey just as a continuation of my healing process. And I think post that psychedelic journey for a number of months, even up until probably mid-December or through the holidays, I was feeling really good about myself. I was thinking, wow, you know, everything they say about psychedelics and changing patterns and really being able to bring myself back to center quicker than I ever have before happened. Okay. I was feeling more centered, more confident, feeling really good, really through the holidays. And you and I joked on the podcast before that we were actually going to do a holiday episode, but we decided not to because we were both very negative about the holidays, especially the winter holidays. So usually the winter holidays I don't look forward to. And usually that is a time of depression for me or some level of lower self-worth or just, you know, kind of more negative feelings. And actually I had a better than average holiday season this year for no other reason than I was feeling good about everything. And I don't know if it was, you know, thinking about not feeling well or the anticipation not feeling well during the holidays. And then I was really busy during the holidays and then things kind of calmed down a little bit. That especially as an empath, when I got overstimulated, then I definitely need to have that downtime and that alone time to kind of recharge and get back into the world. I think a number of things happened, not one in particular, that there was a lot of people needing me for lack of a better term. And I know we've also talked about this on the podcast and I've continually done work about that, not taking on other people's emotions. And I don't think I've done a good job with that the last number of weeks. And I think it's starting to take a toll on me.
So who do you feel has sort of gotten to you in a way where you've taken on their pain or somehow absorbed energy from them that is not in your best interest?
Well, I think it's mostly been family members of mine or an ex-family member of mine that's needed help. And again, for people that either know me or have listened to me through 60-some-odd episodes on this thing, I have a hard time saying no. And I have a hard time letting people down or feeling that I let people down.
Okay. And so as soon as you say that, it seems as though it brings up a lot of feelings of despair.
Yeah, it does.
So who is it that you're feeling maybe guilty or responsible for that you wish that you didn't, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it?
I think it just goes back. I think it goes back to, you know, you know this because we talked about this. I mean, it's, you know, my ex-wife is needing some stuff right now, and she's asking me to help provide that for her. And again, nothing, because as a parent, you want to provide for your children. And I've had, my older daughter has had some medical needs that I've had to pay out of pocket for on her and kind of help walk her through the process because she had a lot of anxiety going into it. And she had surgery, this past week, and it was successful for her. So we got her around the corner, and, you know, I had some dealings with my youngest daughter where a drunk driver totaled her car and dealing, on those things. You know, we've had some technical issues with our podcast recently and trying to recover some really good episodes that we did. And I know you and I have both been frustrated about that process and trying to recover those and figuring out if we're going to retape those. I think it just seems to be what I've talked about before, the stacking of events.
Okay.
And I mean, in the big picture, most of these aren't a really big deal to me, but again, I am a person that takes all of this personally.
Okay.
You know, because I mean, none of them, these are life and death things. Most of them, you know, some of the ones I can say no to, other things, like I said, I'm willing to help my children out, especially when they need help. I'm, you know, the podcast thing, it's going to work itself out. We'll do other episodes. We'll redo them. It's not a big deal. It was only time, you know, but I think when stuff happens in sequentially in a consistent manner, it just begins to stack up. And I think also, you know, I feel like I'm being a poor sap here, but you know, in my quest to find that right life partner and that constant dating thing, that's a downer for me because, you know, finding that right person and then I was dating somebody for a couple of months there and it seemed like it had potential and had the right shared philosophies on life and got along really well. And then it became a scheduling problem because that person, you know, didn't live in the same town that I did. And then it just got to be a hassle of trying to schedule stuff. And then her work schedule and her travel schedule and my kid's schedule and my kid's sports schedules and things like that. And it's like, oh my God, I just can't do it. It's not flowing right now for me.
Do you mind if I, just interrupt briefly and ask you a few questions?
Yes.
My observation, Kim, when you went through your journey was that you connected really deeply with God on a spiritual level.
Oh, that's the other thing I want to mention, but okay. Go ahead.
And what it seemed like to me is that through that experience that you began to feel hopeful in a way that I haven't seen you feel hopeful in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And actually enthusiastically hopeful. That experience seemed to touch something in you that that really struck a chord that, you know, maybe that person that you're looking for, maybe that feeling of loneliness and that need for companionship was finally going to be met, those needs. And then you had a bunch of dreams after the journey that reinforced your connection, and it seemed like that kind of kept you hopeful and going and enthusiastic. All of that sort of thing. And then we did the hypnotherapy session where you got in touch with some very deep feelings of pain and in being adopted and all of that. And all of that seemed to buoy you in a way that gave you hope. It seems like the accumulation of all this stuff has sort of taken the wind out of your sails and drained your feelings of being hopeful and kind of put you back in that old feeling of being a helpless little kid who, no matter how hard he tries, love and connection remains elusive. And if that's not a reason to be really sad and scared, I can't think of any more profound reason than that. So I'm just wondering if underneath the things that you call small, there's sort of a bigger feeling of exasperation, like, oh man, what do I have to do to to have somebody take care of me for a change.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's a symptom. I mean, these are symptoms of a bigger issue with me, right? And I was hopeful when I talked about a few minutes ago was that the LSD or the psychedelic journey that I was on was going to hopefully tend to break that familiar pattern. We did the hypnotherapy session a couple months ago, and it brought up something that I didn't even know was existing inside of me, that fear of abandonment. And it was pretty significant, which was surprising to me. So you're right. I mean, there was a couple of things that, I was thinking about in the last couple of weeks. And when you talked about this, the psychedelic journey and some of the post dreams from that, I had a dream, and I told you this a couple of days ago, I had a dream over this past weekend that I was in an elevator and the elevator was dropping down many floors. And it wasn't that feeling of falling, it was a little bit of that feeling of falling, but I was seeing serpents in the elevator. And it was kind of weird because it was like my friends that have done the ayahuasca type journeys and stuff like that talk about. And I've never done that before, but I started seeing these serpents and stuff. And in my head, I'm like, oh, you're right. I am crazy. And I'm finally figured out I'm crazy. And it was like a relief
to figure out that you were nuts.
Yeah, that I was nuts. It was really bizarre seeing all this stuff. And I'm telling myself in this dream, like, you are crazy. You are literally crazy. And this is just the confirmation that you're crazy. And it felt like it was a relief.
Okay. So how do you explain that dream to yourself in terms of meaning?
I don't know. I guess I justified it to myself by, well, this was just a culmination of your bad self-talk to yourself, that you're not worthy. It's not your time. It's not going to be your time. And I think that was just the processing of that was, well, you're telling yourself all this stuff. So here.
So what if it turns out that, you're crazy to have hope? If you think about it from that perspective, what does that feel like? That you let yourself...
It feels like defeat.
Yeah, that you let yourself get a feeling of really strong feeling of hope, and that in some way you know better than to allow that to come into your life. And so you're having a dream that you're crazy to feel that dropping into yourself and having hope when you feel so defeated and disappointed at this point.
No, I mean, that makes total sense. The other thing I wanted to bring up, because, you and I have talked about this, I've worked through this, the whole thing about, my 1 foot in, 1 foot out on believing in God or believing in a higher spirit or having faith in a higher spirit, was more solidified, obviously, during the psychedelic journey. And then I became a bigger believer in, whether you want to call it manifesting or asking the universe or asking God for what you want, because it seemed like after that, when I would ask for what I wanted, I got it. It showed up, and then it didn't. Then it stopped. And I've been having these conversations with God about why that is. Why did it stop? Why did you stop providing for me? Why am I in this position again?
Any answer?
No answer yet. No. Okay. Oh, the only answer is I have more anxiety right now.
Okay. So shouldn't that leave you feeling kind of shaken?
Yeah. Yeah, because he showed himself to me. He showed me to the other side. He showed me that he was always there, or that through my intuition and stuff. And now, to me, it's left again.
So the question then becomes, how does one hold on to faith in the face of loneliness and disappointment?
That's a good question. That's why we're having this discussion on a podcast right now. I don't know. I mean, I've had, in terms of finding this right partner in life, I use the term resignation, right? I didn't want to use the term defeat because my intuition has always kind of told me that it's going to happen. And so I was a little resigned to the fact because it just didn't seem to be happening, but maybe it wasn't my time yet for it to happen. But that resignation is kind of waning into more defeat now at this point.
So it really has shaken your faith.
Yeah, it has shaken my faith.
So all of that feeling of hopefulness and...
Which I have a hard time admitting on a podcast that it has, because we're supposed to be the voice of reason here and I'm falling apart again.
But maybe your definition of falling apart is not really being very fair to yourself, because who has a life, as we've talked about, without pain and struggle?
Yeah, nobody.
You know, the notion that having faith should provide you with a life without pain. Boy, I sure wish that were the case. I don't know how anybody would feel any sort of faith if that involves a life without pain, because I can see how much pain that you're in, and that no matter how hard you try, there are certain aspects of your life that just feel daunting and really scary. Is it ever going to happen?
Well, I feel, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like I said before, I feel like that little kid again. I feel like, oh my God, the weight of the world's on my shoulders again to make it work, to be the peacemaker, to, like, you know, solve everybody else's problems. And I know, you know, cognitively, intellectually, that's not my deal in life, but that feeling came back again.
Well, I believe that you are here to care for others, but not in the absence of being cared for yourself. So I would hate for you to think that you're making a mistake by feeling that really strong desire to take care of the people that you care about, because that's just the Kim that I know, somebody who really likes taking care of other people. But at a certain point, if you're not being cared for and you're not being sustained and you're not being fed the kind of love and connection that you need, how else can you feel but despair and sadness and that same old feeling of feeling like a little kid and being alone and not having much hope that anybody's ever really going to see you and love you for who you are?
It's been a common pattern in my life.
Yeah. You know? A lot of sadness in that, for sure.
A lot of sadness. I mean, we justify it, or at least I shouldn't say we. I justify it, you know, by the fact that, hey, I'm okay being by myself.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is not something you haven't heard from me before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know part of that is true because I'm sure I can take care of myself. I really do enjoy downtime to be myself, but that's only half the truth, right?
But instead of withdrawing and feeling like you, the only person that you can count on is you to lick your own wounds, why have you hesitated to reach out and just talk about the fact that you feel really scared and defeated and sharing that feeling with me or whoever, so that you don't have to walk around feeling so alone in your pain? Because I think that that's the part that triggers that old feeling of being a little kid. And yet I know there are lots of people who really love you and care for you, and I would imagine would be able to, they can't tell you what's going to happen in the future, obviously, but they certainly could tell you that they feel sad, that I can tell you that I feel sad that you're struggling and that you feel, you know, like you kind of lost your faith a little bit after such an exciting, amazing period of time.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's what's disappointing to me, because I thought I had kind of turned a corner toward, you know, living life a little bit differently or more consistently in that content phase.
Do you feel like reaching out is going to burden me or someone else?
I don't think so. I think it, because as you know me well, sometimes I wait till my back's against the wall before I cry out for help. Yeah. I didn't wait till my back was against the wall. I mean, this is relatively over the last couple of weeks that this has kind of been happening. And again, right. like we've talked about before, sometimes you can't will yourself out of something.
No, of course not.
But being a guy and and knowing that I have a toolbox that is at my use to be able to use, that certainly I could get myself out of this funk that I'm in. And again, it's that, not that I feel bad about talking about it. Obviously I don't, because I'm putting it out to the universe right now, but it's like going back to, you know, being the guy that's there for everybody else.
Yeah.
I don't like to burden people with my stuff, because I'm thinking, okay, I'm smart enough. I've had, like I said, go back to, I have this toolbox that I should be able to use, you know, but sometimes even using that toolbox seems daunting.
You know, I think that part of what was revealed to you in your journey, psychedelic journey, was that in order to feel connected to God, you have to surrender and become really dependent upon that as a sacred connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that may work really well in your spiritual life, but what about in your emotional life? What about depending more on the people that love you to take care of you instead of seeing yourself as a burden? What about trusting that other people would love to take care of you if you give them the chance? They just don't know because you appear so strong and capable.
That might require a part 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Of what?
I said that may require a part 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 of talking about that, because that's not something that is natural to me. And even when you're speaking about it to me, it makes me feel uneasy.
So what happens
to rely on somebody else?
So what happens when I tell you that I'm happy for you to rely on me as your friend and as your partner and as your brother in a certain way?
No, I feel, because you and I have that level of intimacy.
Okay.
That doesn't make me feel uncomfortable, because I think part of it for me, not only the intimacy, is that you understand me and you understand how to deal with me.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know how to. I think this is the thing when we talk about, that we've talked about on the podcast, and I talk about to with other friends just yesterday about the empath's journey. Uh-huh. Here is that it's really hard for other people to understand an empath. And I said, this is why we get each other. And the two people that are empaths I was talking to go, oh my God, that's right. Because we know each other and can figure it out just in our voices, what's going on with each other. And everybody else is like, what's wrong with you?
But if I can give you a hard time briefly, you have waited weeks to even talk to me. And I could tell that you've been suffering. And I've asked a couple times if you're okay. And I have to take you at your word when you tell me that you are. But I could tell for the last few weeks that you haven't been okay. And so I'm just wondering, is there something about our relationship that makes you uncomfortable to depend on me instead of waiting weeks before we have this kind of conversation?
Yeah, I don't think it has to do with you personally or any level of uncomfortableness with me talking to you about it.
Okay.
I just don't think that's just an automatic for me anymore.
So it's something that you kind of have to force yourself to
do. It has to be. And again, like when I came in here today, I said I had a great idea for a podcast.
Yeah.
Because I need help. And so it goes back to what I said earlier. I mean, I've done the work. I continue to do the work. I have this toolbox of tools that I can use. You know, I know what's going on, and in a sense, I know what's going on. I should be able to, you know, get myself out of it. And you know, it's like, you know, in the last major depression that I suffered 5 years ago, 4 years ago, wherever it was, that I tried to will myself out of it for a month or two
before
I got so bad that I reached out for help.
Okay.
And so going only 2 weeks this time before saying something
good, huh?
is an improvement for me. So again, it's not personal. It's just not still something automatic. And it's not that I don't trust you or value you in as a friend or as a therapist or in any way. It's just not automatic for me to do, because again, to me, it's like, okay, I should be able to figure this out myself.
So is that where the shame comes into the picture, that it feels shameful too, that with as much therapy you've had and all the ways you know yourself, that you still occasionally need to feel connected to someone?
100%, because remember, I was told throughout my life by my father that I would not amount to anything in my life, that I would never be successful and that I wouldn't amount to anything. And so that, I don't care how much, and I've talked about this before, so I apologize, but I don't care how much therapy you've had, how many psychedelic journeys you've been on or whatever, when your own parent tells you that throughout your life, that doesn't go away.
Right. So you run up against the wall of feeling like a failure and that your dad was right.
Yeah, I think that again becomes confirmation, you know, like, oh yeah, he's right. You know, I can't figure it out for myself. I have to constantly ask for help. So he was probably right. I am weak.
So the idea that love is like hunger, mm-hmm. and that you can only be satiated for moments at a time, just like you can be with food. And that we all need to be fed on a regular basis. Otherwise, we experience the same feelings of agitation and discomfort and sometimes even desperation when we're hungry enough. Do you sort of accept the notion that that can also be your emotional body's reaction to feeling really hungry for love and connection?
Oh, yeah, I can accept that.
Because that could,
I can accept the notion, but and I'm trying to say this correctly. I don't know how to figure that out though, in the way of how it would make me feel better.
Well, I don't really think it's that different than the fact that you don't seem ashamed when you're hungry for food. You don't seem to shame yourself and feel like you're weak, that you actually need food to survive. Mm-hmm. So why be prejudiced against the emotional body, your emotional body, when you're not with your physical body? Why is one a source of shame and the other, you just take it for granted that it's okay to take care of your physical body and you don't seem to have trouble with that?
So I mean, that makes complete sense in an intellectual standpoint, but isn't there a disassociation between what you feel and what you think in that way?
Well, I think that we're all brought up to believe that dependency on an emotional level is a sign of weakness, whereas the need for food and water and shelter is normal. So I do agree with you that there is a lot of shaming in the process of admitting that you can't live without connection. And that as men, especially, we're encouraged to feel really badly if we say that we're lonely or that we need connection of some kind.
Yeah, you know, I'm not ashamed as a man to admit that.
Okay.
And it's something I certainly have been striving for, especially later in life, and understand how important it is to have that connection. But I still think that I disassociate intellectualizing that versus feeling that, if that makes sense.
So when you're, like, I know that you spend a fair bit of time with your friends having coffee and hiking and doing all kinds of stuff. Do you feel like it's okay with your closest friends to let them know you're feeling the feelings that you're going through? Or do you feel like you're supposed to kind of be okay no matter what?
It depends on who.
Well, I mean, you spend a great deal of time with certain people. I'm assuming it's because...
Well, I do, but again, I think it goes back to, you know, feeling comfortable and having those discussions with certain people. I mean, again, I like to have intimacy and transparency with people I call friends and not just acquaintances. Mm-hmm. To me, it's more the reaction that they have, or not knowing what to say to you.
So you get advice as opposed to feeling connection.
I'll get advice versus just listening from that. And that's not a knock. Certainly not a knock on my friends. Because
no, but it is a common way that people often respond to our pain. It scares them, so they want to make it go away by telling you what to do to make it better.
Absolutely.
And that is about as satisfying as rice cakes.
Without anything on them.
Right.
Yeah, you're right, because that's not what I'm looking for.
Are you clear about what it is that you're looking for?
Yeah, you mean if I were to come clean with a friend?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking for a level of compassion and saying, God, I'm sorry that your life sucks at the moment. Is there anything I can do for you?
And have you ever tried to teach your friends to take care of you in that way? or is that not something that you would necessarily feel comfortable with?
Yeah, I don't know if I've actually taught them to respond to me that way or treat me that way. I think at least in the last 5 or 6 years in cultivating friendships and deeper friendships, I choose to probably pick people that's more natural to them than them teaching that. And so I'm pretty comfortable talking to my friends about how I'm feeling and things, but again, I'm not looking for unsolicited or solicited advice from them about how to make it better.
So does it seem like a strange idea that you might need to teach the people that you care about how to take care of you?
Yes.
I think that's the way most people feel, that if you have to teach somebody how to do it, there must be something wrong. And I think in our world, most people have no idea how to handle emotional pain.
Well, and I think that's a thing that I've been trying to learn and understand if I actually do attract a partner, an intimate partner into my life, is not just assuming that person knows how to deal with me, how to take care of me, how to, you know, provide some level of compassion, but, you know, helping them understand what I need instead of just assuming that they would know that. But I think from an intimate partner standpoint, that's different than somebody I'm going on a hike with or sitting down for coffee with or working out with in that way.
So it doesn't feel like it's like appropriate or okay to do, or I'm not sure if I quite understand.
I think it's, I don't think it's inappropriate to do with your friends, because if they're friends, they're going to understand and they're probably going to value that you said that to them. It's just an uncomfortableness with me to actually go there and have that request. Probably shouldn't be, but I'm just saying as I sit here right now, that it is an uncomfortableness for me to ask them to respond a certain way.
Okay. And I can appreciate that, because most of the time we're happy to take care of other people and we do the best we can to read what they need and to provide them what they need. But I'm not sure that everybody else is as capable of doing the same with you.
I don't know. I think that's probably correct.
It doesn't mean they don't care about you.
Right.
They just may not be as psychologically sophisticated as you are. And the natural thing is to get scared. And when we get scared, we try to control whatever it is that's scaring us. So I would assume if you told someone that you were lonely or whatever you were feeling, it would probably scare them, because they're not used to you being anything other than the caretaker.
They'll recommend that I go back on dating websites and find somebody that will take care of your loneliness. Yes. Which isn't, I mean, they're not being facetious, but
no, but it's not what you're looking for. Cause
it's not what I'm looking for. And again, like you said, unless you're telling people what you're looking for and, you know, then they're just assuming, or like you said, responding to their own fear. And
so you end up having to take care of them instead of them taking care of you again.
Exactly. Exactly. So when's it going to be my time?
That is the question of the hour.
But I guess that's up to me.
Yes, in yes a way. And no. I mean, it's up to you, obviously, to let me, as an example, know that you require some caring, because I'm certainly happy to provide it to you. And I'm not particularly interested in telling you what to do, because I trust that you already know what you need to do. It's finding the faith and the courage to keep moving forward, despite the fact that you feel like you had your ass handed to you.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's all subjective in that way, right? Because I look at it and I think, God, you know, the way I describe my problems, or leading up to the way I feel today, are very trivial, right? These are, you know, life problems that people deal with every day, and they're not consequential, but they're not inconsequential either. But, you know, to me, it doesn't seem like it's such a big deal. But, you know, I think it goes back to the underlying premise that I continue to deal with in terms of, you know, when is somebody going to take care of me?
You know, Kim, if you're willing to look at it from that perspective, what could be more painful than feeling like you've never been properly loved in your entire life? That is not an inconsequential feeling. It doesn't get more painful in a certain way than that, to feel like, is it ever going to happen? I got my hopes up. I started to have faith that if I surrendered to God and allowed God to help me, that what I was looking for would come my way. And then you got disappointed and had a couple of really negative experiences that set you back. I mean, how are you supposed to be okay under those circumstances? How do you retain your faith under those circumstances?
Yeah, I keep, that's a good question, because I keep searching that I'm doing something wrong, right? That, you know, am I searching under the wrong rock here? Is my process, is my thought process, is it all wrong here? Because, you know, you see it, and again, this is crying the poor, poor, pitiful me thing, but you see it happening for other people, and then you don't see it happening for you. So, and it's like, wow, I'm putting the same amount of effort, if not more effort, into this process and trying to do it the way I think is correct, and it's just not happening.
So it raises a certain question. Are you allowed to be angry with God?
Can you? He got an earful yesterday. He or she, yeah. Or whatever, however you believe in,
whatever
in God, he showed up to me as a man, way, but.
But is acceptable to you to have a certain amount of outrage and almost like having a tantrum, and not in a bad way?
I asked him. I said, why'd you show up
exactly
seven, eight months ago and tell me everything was going to be okay, and you've always been there, and it was you when I was sitting in my closet at 7 years old trying to you know, find security and comfort and peace and then you were around, and then you're not here right now. Well, what's the deal?
And did you ever get any sort of a feeling?
I haven't gotten a feeling. I haven't gotten a feeling back. I was going to have another chat with him today, okay, about it. I don't know. He's probably got a lot of other pissed off people at him right now. I don't know. Or her.
I think in order for us to feel any sort of hope and faith, we have to be constantly reassured that our faith is well-placed. And when some series of events takes place or doesn't take place in this situation, it's hard not to get really frustrated and to feel like you've been forsaken and that you've been fooled, you've been tricked into having hope when you knew better, that sort of thing, and that it's better just to shut yourself down and close up shop and stop trying because it hurts too much to move forward.
Well, it takes you back to why I had one foot in, one foot out the first time in it, right? It's like, well, it's again, it's going to go back to, and this sounds bad, this is not going to happen for me.
Right.
And so you better just come to grips with that at some point.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe it wasn't for me. Maybe I've already had my time in life for that, and I'm supposed to be doing something else. you know, that doesn't involve finding love in my life or finding, you know, somebody else or people to take care of me or whatever. Maybe it's, I'm on some other mission at this point that I'm not aware of at the moment. But that, I mean, but it does lend your thought pattern to drift that way.
Okay. So the reason that you and I started this podcast was to help people manage their fear in a more graceful way.
Now I sound like a hypocrite.
And so I'm here to remind you that you have every reason to be afraid because you've been hurt and disappointed and let down. And you're doing what most of us do, is just to turn your fear into an aggression and take it out on yourself by painting really negative pictures about the future and about hope and about possibility and all of that stuff. So I'm wondering, again, if there's a different way that you could manage this fear without being so aggressive toward yourself.
Well, I agree with you, right? Because I completely checked myself, and I knew I was reacting to something, right? It wasn't, like we talked about, it wasn't fear itself. It was my reaction to the fear I was having that is causing the issue.
Right.
Right. But sometimes you get to a point where you can't see the forest through the trees, and it's like, okay, I understand what's happening here, but
right,
I'm not getting a clear view of what I should be doing here or what my reaction should have been or how I'm going to manage this reaction right now. But I get it. You know, I just, at the moment, my mojo is so low that I'm having a hard time getting back to the center here.
So once again, it raises the question, how does one retain their faith in the face of sadness and loneliness and hopelessness, besides painting negative pictures about the future?
Well, if history repeats itself, which it usually does, I know that at some point I'll get a handle on this and I'll regain my faith.
But again, I know I'm being a pain in the ass, but how does one do that? Is there a process that you could conceivably go through besides rejecting yourself and God in the process?
I think it's having an open and honest conversation with yourself and realizing that you're reacting.
But what about asking for more help instead of rejecting it? What about making yourself feel?
You're hitting me between the eyes with a very foreign concept.
Well,
there.
I do, but what I'm asking you to
who
consider
am I going
to
ask for more help from?
The people that love you and God. Because
okay.
I can tell you only through experience that my issues are much more physical than having to do with love, but I am constantly facing my mortality, it seems like, on a fairly regular basis. And yeah, it's really hard to maintain my faith under those circumstances. Like, you know, why does this keep happening? And how much strength can a person have before they just give up and feel like, you know, I'm done? Because if you would have talked to me yesterday, I was done. I was done. But for some weird reason, I woke up this morning feeling like, okay, you know, I made a commitment that I was going to stay alive as long as I can. So I can't give in to that fear in that way. What I got to do is keep fighting and keep asking for help, despite the fact that I feel really scared and vulnerable. So I guess what I'm proposing that you consider is to do the opposite of what you're inclined to do.
But you mean to run away?
Yeah. Yes, to make yourself more vulnerable.
To actually make it more vulnerable and face that fact and ask for more help.
Yes, instead of taking control over the fear and turning it into aggression, to sort of do the opposite, which is, okay, man, I'm trying so hard and I feel so fucked and I feel so defeated and I feel like you don't love me and nobody does. I need more help because I can't do this by myself. Like, I need help. I need to feel like somebody's carrying me at least a little bit. I need my faith to be renewed. I need some hope here. because if I don't get it soon, I'm going to just fold up my tent and crawl under a rock, because that's what I've taught myself to do from the time I was a little kid. I'm just going to go back in the closet and hide, because I can't take this anymore. I can't bear another moment of disappointment and loneliness.
Does that mean I should stop Googling islands that have no people on them? Which I actually did. I mean, I was being somewhat facetious, but I actually did that.
Well,
I was thinking if I take the element of humanization out for a while, maybe that would knock me across the side of the head to want to get back to civilization at some point.
Well, that's why I was...
But that's the run. That's, you know, I was being facetious, but that's my running away from it. Yeah. Not running toward it. I'm running away from it. And that's my natural defense mechanism right. that I'm used to.
Well, that's why I'm teasing you by right. saying that what's required is the opposite of what your trained inclination is, which is nobody loves me. I got to just go be by myself because I'm the only person I can sort of rely on instead of...
Sounds like you've been in my head.
What's that?
Sounds like you've been in my head.
Well, because this is just such a natural way that we deal with pain is to feel hopeless and scared. I'm the prime example. And what I've learned more than anything is those are the moments when I need the help the most, not to turn away from it, but turn toward it. And to beg, if that's what it takes, to feel some sort of connection and some sort of, like I'm not alone and having to face into the scary stuff that just keeps happening over and over and over again, because I don't want to give up yet. I'm not ready to give up yet.
Do I have to apologize to God first about the rant I went on yesterday?
Well, I don't know if you need to apologize, because I don't really believe that God cares, you know, how you speak to God, him or her or whatever, because I think that more than anyone, God knows that we are incredibly vulnerable and really scared most of the time and feel such a strong need for some kind of connection, and not just from other people, but on a level that just feels really vital and internal. I get mad all the time thinking, you know, what the fuck? Why is this happening to me? I'm tired of all of this stuff. What more, how much more pain can I bear in the course of my lifetime? And, you know, I can be as self-pitying as anybody you've ever met. And I try to joke about it, but sometimes it's not funny. Sometimes I reach a threshold, just like you're talking.
No, I know self-pity's not funny at all.
Right? We all have a threshold that we just cannot sort of overcome when it just feels too scary and too overwhelming. So I guess what I'm asking you to do is the best you can not to turn that into aggression toward yourself. Because to me, that's a bad habit that you got into a long time ago, is just to convince yourself you don't have any needs and you're okay and you're Mr. self-sufficient and that, you know, it's all over and maybe and all the stuff you tell yourself is only going to make you feel 100 times worse.
It's like a billboard inside my head.
Yeah. Instead of just admitting that you feel incredibly defeated and you need some help and you need some hope and you got to have it and you can't live without it, because nobody can live without it. Life is too despairing without it. It's too lonely and overwhelming without it.
Despite what my mother told me.
Despite what?
Despite what my mother told me, the boys don't have feelings and boys shouldn't cry.
Well, luckily, we know that our parents are not the people we should trust when it comes to wisdom.
That's true.
Because if I listen to my dad, then I would be a perpetrator because I don't want to be a victim. And those are the only two choices. What the hell is that all about? It's ridiculous. Right? It's as ridiculous as your mom saying that that you make a big deal about nothing and that you shouldn't cry and
right.
and all of that stupid stuff that, you know, that you came into the world believing is going to help you in some way.
So obviously my work is to take the car out of reverse and put it in drive
and go
toward the pain and not away from the pain.
That's right. As you know, I know you know this. This is something you've proven to yourself
well,
over
well,
and
it's
over.
Like we've talked before, is it that, you know, my mind can certainly, you know, fight my intuition sometimes.
And again,
or try and outsmart my intuition.
I am absolutely not telling you that you shouldn't be afraid. I'm hoping that that's not what you're hearing.
Oh, no, I'm afraid.
Because you should be afraid.
Oh, I'm afraid.
Any time that you're dealing with one of the most essential things in life that you don't have, if you're not afraid there's something really wrong with you. So the idea is not to like not be afraid and just be strong and all that crap. It's to actually acknowledge how scared you are and how overwhelming it feels sometimes that everybody wants something from you and nobody's given much to you. And that is okay for most of life because you're really good at loving people. But at a certain point, it's like, come on.
There is a certain amount of fulfillment in giving than receiving, right?
Sure. I love to give to people, but sometimes,
But you have to learn how to receive as much as you learn how to give, yes. Right? And that has been a downside for me because I'm so uncomfortable in doing that. And I do appreciate your words about driving toward the fear and pain and not going away from it because I need to hear that.
Well, and you're actually really good at it. I've seen it in action. And it's not as though you're not capable because when you allow yourself to go into the depth of your despair, usually you're pretty good at cleaning it out of your body and releasing it.
The catharsis is, I can do pretty well with that these days.
And so you're lucky in that regard because, I've met people that haven't cried in 20 or 30 years. And I think, whoa, I don't think they have laxatives strong enough to release that stuff, right? I mean, that's a big buildup of a lot of...
Well, luckily we're doing a verbal podcast because the folks here couldn't see the tears coming down my cheeks.
Right.
I held it. I held it together voice-wise, but there were tears coming down my cheeks.
Yeah, for sure. As there should be. Because it's not okay to let yourself feel that hope and then watch it drain away.
So you have to be my constant reminder then.
I'm happy to do it.
So if I'm asking you as a friend and as a confidant and as my partner and my podcast co-host, if I can hold you to a standard, you have to keep reminding me that I have to go forward and not go in reverse.
I'm so happy to do that. I mean, the last time we were together, I told you that I was planning on taking my family on a trip and I said, why don't you come?
Right.
Because I was trying to figure out some way. How can I help him feel included and cared for and loved?
No, I don't feel like I'm not included in your family, which I'm very appreciative of and so on and so forth. I've never felt not included.
I know that, but I can tell that you need more. And I'm just trying to figure out some way, I want to care for you. I'm like you in that way. I like taking care of people. It feels good.
No, and I appreciate that because there's probably a lot of people that don't have people like you in their life.
Yeah, and we're lucky to have each other.
I almost held it together.
But, Kim, in order to be okay, this has got to come out. This intense sadness needs to come forward. And it's really important for people, if they can't see you, to at least hear you, allowing yourself to be really, really vulnerable in the face of disappointment and getting your hopes up and feeling your hopes dashed and all of that. Because we spend so much time trying to trivialize our pain and make it seem like, oh, well, I was going to say I've had a dollar for everybody who said, well, why my pain's not that bad. What about this person? I think to myself, well, this person's not here right now. I'm with you, and your pain is real.
We all have a different pain scale, right? And it only matters to you. It doesn't matter to if somebody else's is greater. It's
not
how what you feel. It's not a contest. And you're right. I was trivializing it, and I also wasn't planning to come on the podcast today and cry, but.
Well, as somebody who has been fortunate enough to have enduring love in my life, I can't even imagine life without it, Kim. So my heart goes out to you because I know you and I really believe you deserve it. And I, if you could see me through your eyes, it would be easier for you to to understand what you deserve. But, easier said than done, right?
I know. It is. But I appreciate you and I appreciate being able to have this conversation because not only was it really important for me to hear that, and I think it's really good advice, and it will certainly help me, go forward here and ask for that help and ask the universe for that help as well. But I'm sure somebody listening to this podcast is going through the same thing.
I would tell you that most people that listen to the podcast and live in the world that don't listen to the podcast have had these feelings probably almost every day. We just cover it up. We cover it up with food and alcohol and work and every distraction we can find. This is life. Super vulnerable.
Yeah, maybe I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't have those distractions. I don't know. But at least I mean, if I had those distractions, I guess I wouldn't be trying to face the pain.
Well, you're
I'd always be running away from it.
You're talking to Dr. Bias here, who has a very strong bias in favor of facing the pain and not ignoring it and distracting yourself from it, because it doesn't go anywhere. It just accumulates.
No, I get it. I understand that.
And
right?
Like you said, when it sets in, then it turns into depression, and then you got a whole nother thing you got to deal with on top of the grief and the loneliness.
I've been down too many rabbit holes in my life, and you know, I don't want to go down and stay down one for a long period of time, because I know how shitty that feels. And you know, it's only so much time in your life, and you don't want to spend a lot of it down in a rabbit hole. Thank you for this. And
so
it was very helpful.
How are you feeling right now besides sadness? Are you feeling any different?
I feel different. I mean, I am sad, but I think that sadness needed to come out, because I was certainly feeling something within my body that was like this heaviness the last couple of weeks. And so, you know, the tears needed to come out and things. And I think that, again, you put it in perspective for me about what was happening, and gave me hope and gave me something to work on that, you know, that I will take seriously and continue to work on it. And hopefully by working on that, change that billboard that's in my head that, you know, that I tend to still retreat from.
'Cause it seems to me that you need to feel carried and loved more than ever, not less than ever.
Should get a dog or a teddy bear at this point, I guess. Something. But, you know.
Absolutely.
But no, it was helpful, so thank you.
Okay. Do you mind if I just speak briefly about the therapy process now that you and I have sort of concluded the therapy session?
I'd actually prefer you speak now.
Okay. I just want to, again, reiterate that I had no idea what you and I were going to talk about. There's no treatment plan. There's no diagnosis. No, there's no anything other than us connecting with each other. And me doing the best I can to help you feel like you're not alone in the world, and that your feelings are absolutely relevant and need to be honored and respected. And that's my notion about how to be the best therapist that I can be, is to be present to your pain and help you not feel ashamed of yourself to the best of my ability. Because you don't deserve to suffer any more than anybody else.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you. So
thank you, Kim.
Thanks. And thanks for people that have to listen to my or choose to listen to my babble here. So thanks,
babble.
Everyone.
I think it was incredibly brave of you to be vulnerable again.
All right. Till next time. Thanks.
We appreciate our listeners and are interested in your comments and suggestions. Feel free to email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor for this podcast, please email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you next time.